This is KGVM 95.9 or KGVM.org of the Gallatin Valley. I am Dr. Arliss Wood, psychologist, with Dr. Suzanne Wood, speech-language pathologist, as hosts. We welcome you to the Health and Happiness Show. We have many fascinating topics and guests. Today will be no different. We emphasize the position of mental health in our programs and acknowledge the Montana Psychological Association Public Education Committee for endorsing this presentation. Now, Dr. Suzanne will introduce today's notable guest.
From the Song for Cecilia's Day by Joseph Addison back in the 1700s, he said, "Music, the greatest good that mortals know, in all of heaven we have below." From William Congreve's famous lines, "Music has charms to soothe a savage breast, to soften rocks or bend a knotted oak." And then Victor Hugo said, "Music expresses that which cannot be put into words and that which cannot remain silent." Even Hans Christian Andersen weighed in. He said, "Where words fail, music speaks." And Longfellow said that music is the universal language of mankind. And today, we have the consummate provider of music for our community. We welcome Norman Nguyen and his whole staff and all that they do. We're so honored to have you, Director. Welcome.
Thanks, Suzanne. Hi, Arliss.
Hi, how you doing?
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming.
We really appreciate you taking the time out to talk about music. We'd like you maybe to tell us how you became interested in music, your journey with music.
Sure. So my parents are both immigrants. My mom came from Taiwan in the early 80s, and my dad is a refugee from Vietnam. And so they owned a Chinese buffet restaurant in Montgomery, Alabama, and I spent a large amount of my childhood running up and down the tables and chatting with customers and being in the kitchen. And classical music wasn't a big part of my life. And when I got to middle school, because in the South, Alabama, where I grew up, you basically were given a choice. Middle school is where, at least I was told, where you can join band. And so I was ready to join band. I picked up the trombone and immediately fell in love. It was something I was really good at right away instead of video games or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so it just kind of, I stuck with it. And then eventually I ended up at the University of Alabama to study music education. And I was on a path to be, or I was studying to be a band director. Mm-hmm. Because band was a big part of my life up to that point. And when I was around 19 years old, I heard Gustav Mahler's Symphony No. 2 on YouTube on some headphones the last 15 minutes, and I was absolutely blown away. I had never heard anything like that before. I'd never seen a full orchestra plus choir, plus children's chorus, plus organ, and all these, this amount of forces, and this big concert hall, and the conductor, Simon Rattle. And I was blown away on looking at my laptop. And I thought, you know, I want to do that. I want to conduct that kind of music. I want to conduct at that kind of level, at the top of the orchestra world. And so That was the impetus and the start of my journey for diving into orchestral classical music.
That's so heartening, because sometimes we misthink that children start at age three, you know, on the piano, and you have to be really into it, you know, by age 10 or whatever.
Right.
And here you came into it after high school and really could perceive what it was all about and wanted to go there. I love that story. That's would encourage everyone out there to maybe think it could be me too.
Right. And, you know, I felt, especially going into, I ended up going to the Peabody Conservatory in Baltimore to study conducting. And a lot of my colleagues there, is a small conservatory, studied their instruments starting at three and their training. Yeah. And so I always felt like I was a little bit behind. Mm-hmm. But there was this, I could always rely on sort of, I guess, I had really great mentors and teachers and training, and I felt like I could keep up. And the really great thing about going to a conservatory with everyone at a very high level is that you sort of rise up to that level very quickly and by, I guess, by osmosis or what, but it was really a wonderful journey. Like, oh, I actually do belong at this level.
That's just thrilling. I can imagine you were just perfectly beside yourself with mm-hmm. joy at being able to be with this group.
Yeah.
And to do this.
And I still am. Every time I step on the podium to conduct, whether it's the Bozeman Symphony, we were just talking about Beethoven Symphony No. 6, this repertoire, there's such a wide amount of music, and it's such a privilege, and I'm so grateful that I can, that my job is studying these incredible pieces of art and music and performing it for people who are grateful and want to come hear that.
And I must say, he has a great metacognitive overview, which is, you know, you're doing something, you're operating at a certain level, but then the next level is that you're able to monitor how you're operating. Am I doing well? Am I going where I wanted to go? And I think what I'm hearing is that just every level was just sensational for you. And I must say, one of the things we found very dear about the recent Beethoven concert was the story. I mean, we felt like we were there with Beethoven when you talked about his deafness and how that was so depressing to him, and we almost lost him at that point. Tell us that story, if you would, Norman.
Yeah, so Beethoven, under the prescription of his doctors, started to, in around 1802, started losing his hearing loss started speeding up. And his doctors recommended that he go to the countryside to be out in nature, and it was thought that, you know, this would heal his what he was going through. And
can I just point out there that you told us, and in fact, that he was having huge melancholy and considering suicide, and wrote to his family that this might be the end for me. I can't imagine a life without music.
Right, and this letter called the Heiligenstadt Testament was this letter to his brothers, and, you know, at the end of the day, is he couldn't live his life without the music, but he also, and I don't think I had mentioned this to the audience, but he really saw himself as the gift that he had for writing music. He knew what he was saying through music was going to last for many, many hundreds of years to come. So he felt like he had this job, essentially, to carry that mantle and write this music, because the struggle that he had as a person and a human, and I think we sort of forget about this, that Beethoven was like us, you know, he had all of his dreams and worries, and obviously his struggles of his hearing loss, but at the end of the day, a lot of his music is very human, and it goes through the struggle. And what's really great is that he gives us this conquering of what fate has essentially bestowed upon us, that you can break through whatever fate has given you and overcome your constraints and what life has given you.
Yes, Maestro, that is so true, so true. And so in looking over the occupation of music, young people coming out, you know, I think it might be difficult to get a foothold in the music world in some ways. What do you say to young people coming out? Is this a good field to enter? Or should only those who are predisposed and have, you know, gifts already, they can tell? How do you want to advise younger people thinking about this?
I would definitely say it's not an easy path. Especially because in classical music, you know, there's so many different genres that are actually thriving, like video game music, right? There's a large amount of job opportunities for composers to write music for games.
Never
or
thought about
films,
that, of
right?
Course.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. There are more opportunities than there are composers, actually, which is wild. But in the classical music industry, it can be very difficult because a lot of what we hear is that classical music is dying, or that that it's hard to get young people into the concert hall. And so you have all of these negative things that are sort of stacked against you, and you're thinking, oh gosh, if you're 16 years old and you're thinking, well, in 30 years from now, is my art form still going to be relevant? And for me, I say absolutely. And we need as many people out there to share this incredible music, because whether you've listened to classical music or not, just the act of hearing Mozart or hearing Bach, Beethoven, Brahms, or even newer classical music, we know it's good for your brain.
Oh,
that,
yes. That is
just
such
listening
a
to it.
Based
right?
Comment. Right there. We'll get to see those soon.
And it's almost like it's hard to know that it is good for you because you can't see it, the immediate results of that, right? But for me, it's music can pull us out of depression. Music, I mean, at least for me, it's done that. It can be this solace and comfort as you're feeling in your worst moments of your life. I've always felt like music has been the one thing that has been there consistently and mm-hmm. has been always a part of my soul. And as I live, it's how I see the world is through music.
And I look at it that way also, but as a researcher about learning on the brain at the molecular level, I know also that learning music, playing music, and even listening to complex music is like brain exercise.
Mm-hmm.
It's just golden for those neural pathways of the brain. And it even causes certain areas of the brain to grow more.
Right.
So it changes things internally for us. And it's just one of the better gifts in the world. It's golden what you
yes.
give to us and what you bring to us. And so we all should actually turn on music, keep it on,
mm-hmm.
and treasure our musicians and artists.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I have a lot of colleagues who are incredible musicians, and you mentioned the act of playing music and the training that it takes. Those skills that you gain through that, resilience, this, I forget the term that, the psychological term you're using, but sort of self-assessment on the above view. We do that a lot as mm-hmm. as musicians, listening to ourselves play or perform, critiquing, how do we get better? And those skills, I have a lot of friends who are musicians who have sort of switched careers, and they've gone into other highly skilled jobs, like being a sommelier or things like that, of being able to understand refinement. And there's a lot of benefits, even if I'm talking specifically to the younger listeners who may be studying music now. Mm-hmm. It's good for you.
Oh,
you're right.
And it's just excellent for you. And I know many of the musicians that we know, the symphonic players or others, might have other jobs, other work, and they do both. What would you say to a person coming up? Should you have a backup along with your music, or do you think you should just dive headlong into music?
I would say I had my backup was my music education degree. I always knew that I could be a teacher, because it is, I mean, really, it just depends on the level that someone wants to work in. You know, there's there's a level of conducting a community group, all volunteers, and the range is sort of very wide. There's the mid-level, there's the top tier of like the New York Philharmonic, the LA Phil, and there are specific, there's a kind of focus one needs to have mm-hmm. If they want to be at that very, 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 very top. Mm-hmm. But there, that very, very, very top is only a small part of what you can do with music.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, it's the audience that you're reaching out to and the lives that you're affecting and changing through your music.
Yeah, is to just go into a little bit of some of the studies to back up exactly everything you're saying, Maestro. Well, research, this is from a grouping of several studies about music, and research suggests that background music, or music that is played while the listener is primarily focused on another activity, can improve performance on cognitive tasks. So, to everyone out there, tune in, listen to the symphony while you're working, while you're studying. It's very good for cognition, which is our thinking process. So that's one big advantage of what you do. And, of course, the players have all of these advantages as well, and the teachers of music. So it also has a great impact on the human stress response, particularly, big words here, hypothalamic, pituitary adrenal axis, and the autonomic nervous system. Just means how we operate. Mm-hmm. It really is substantially helpful with that. And I love this one. One of the most surprising psychological benefits of music, everybody listen, it might be a helpful weight loss tool. How many Americans are trying to lose weight right now? So if you're trying to lose weight, listening to mellow music and dimming the lights might help you achieve your goals. Huh. And I found several studies that talked about that.
What? Why? How?
One thing is, if you increase the rate of the music, notice they're saying relaxed music,
mm-hmm.
you would eat more. If you're playing da 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 da,
oh,
you eat faster, faster, faster.
Wow.
If you're playing la 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 la, you slow down, you eat, you chew, all of that is slowed down. But music sets the pace, according to several really good studies. So I loved that aspect. And there's one more study that the research suggested that people who are distracted by listening to music or if that music creates increased arousal, like you're listening to Beethoven and it's powerful, they disregard feelings of hunger.
Oh.
You're so intrigued with the music, your tummy just has to fade away.
I can see a big sign. Come to the symphony and lose weight.
Yeah, that's. I love that.
I just thought that was really fun. And we'll go in for some more, but tell us how you ended up coming to Bozeman, if you would, Norman.
Sure. So it was around the early part of, I'd say maybe the fall of 2018, I was the associate conductor of the Oregon Symphony in Portland, Oregon, and a colleague of mine in the orchestra, Sam, came up to me and he said, "Hey, Norman, the Bozeman Symphony has a music director opening coming up. I think you would be the perfect fit for this job." And Sam Park had filled in for Carrie Krause, our concertmaster here, for I think 2 seasons while she was doing her studies at Juilliard.
We had Carrie on the show two or three times. Yeah.
So
love Carrie.
So he knew about the Bozeman Symphony, and I said, "Well, I'll think about it." Because at that time, my career has always been nice, a steady upward trajectory, but I was starting to get more debuts, and I thought Bozeman, I'd never really heard of Bozeman, like, where's Bozeman? And then later that year, I got an email from Carrie Krause, and she said, "Hi, Norman, I'm Carrie Krause, the concertmaster of the Bozeman Symphony. I'm reaching out to invite you to apply as a music director because a couple of my colleagues have recommended you." I said, "Okay, I'll think about it. And thank you. I'm very honored." And so I ended up just applying because I looked up Bozeman. I was like, "Oh, wow. It's okay. Mm-hmm. Montana. Ooh, it's kind of beautiful here. Oh, I like skiing."
Big surprise.
Right. And so I thought, okay, sure. I had been a staff conductor now for about 3 years, and I was ready to get my first music director job. And so I applied, and I got invited for a semi-round interview. So I think they had about 16 people. They had almost 300 people apply, and they whittled it down to 16 people.
Wow.
And we all did Skype interviews with the committee. And then I got invited to be one of the 6 finalists. So each one of the finalists got to come and conduct the orchestra. And we were here for 2 weeks. It's sort of like the speed dating kind of thing. And 2019, December, was my concert. And I remember thinking, oh, it's the December concert. I'll throw in like the Christmas Carol sing-along as an encore. I got this in the back. This is great because it's my jam. Mm-hmm. Programming for the holidays. And turns out, March 2020, COVID happened, right? And everything shut down.
Yeah.
I had done my audition, and I came out here, fell in love with Bozeman. I mean, flying in, I was thinking, whoa, this place is, where am I flying into?
Mm-hmm.
Went to the Christmas stroll, Nutcracker, mm-hmm. kind of did all the fun Bozeman things that one does in the beginning of December. And had a great week with the orchestra. Then COVID happens in March, and they stopped the search. And the board chair, Stephen Shockman, called me and said that they wanted to offer me the position. And at that time, the Oregon Symphony had laid off the whole orchestra for COVID. And, I mean, we could collect unemployment, but it was to save the organization, that's just what had to happen. And I thought, okay, you know what? This is a good time. I could spend some time in Bozeman during a pandemic. Why not? And so that's how I said yes. Mm-hmm. And my first day was June 8th of 2020, which is my birthday.
Oh, how nice.
My 32nd birthday.
Beautiful time of year.
Yeah. And so came out here in the summer and obviously fell in love again with the mm-hmm. incredible summer. And mm-hmm. Here we are 5 seasons later. I'm in my 6th season now.
It's great.
And bravo for the season.
Oh, thank you. Bravo. Thank you. Mm. I've had a blast.
A little bit more about music and another area is just marvelous. If you're trying to learn a language, try singing it. It shortens learning time and helps you remember it. So that's research-based. These comments are very research-based. In addition, something very serious that it does is pain reduction. Research has shown that music can be very helpful in the management of pain. One study of fibromyalgia patients found that those who listened to music for just 1 hour a day experienced a significant reduction in pain compared to the controls who did not do that. And a review of the effects of music on pain found that patients who listened to music, I love this, before, during, or even after surgery, experienced less pain and anxiety than those who did not listen to music. So if you're undergoing pain, one of those things that could serve as an antidote and a support system is music. If you're going to have surgery, haul out the earphones.
That's right.
Yeah, so that was something I thought was amazing for pain, because there's so few things that really counteract pain other than heavy medications, and
right.
to know that we can use music and just think in recovery times as well. Covering yourself with music helps to mask all those symptoms that we're having. Arliss, did you have any questions for Norman?
Just historically, for example, growing up in the Bible Belt, this is shit I did, heard oftentimes about David and playing the harp or whatever he played. He used it when he was depressed and to show joy. So there's many historical accounts of people who have used music. And do you have any favorite stories or heroes from the historical past?
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, along with what he said, that I think that David soothed the miseries of the king and therefore helped the whole kingdom with his wonderful music for the king. Yeah.
I would, I'm trying to think here. What would be...
Beethoven's from what, 17th, 18th?
Yep, the 1770 to 1827 is that time period.
Yeah.
I love that there is a god for music, Orpheus, and his lyre, and going into the underworld, right? to like using music to go into the most dangerous or darkest place, where all of the underworld, right? The Hades, and going
down,
to save
and
Eurydice, right? And it's right,
and you're traveling when you listen to that,
one where I noticed a big impact just personally in during the pandemic, I kind of took a hiatus from studying music or really listening to classical music, orchestral music. And I remember just feeling so down, depressed, whatever the word was. I was in a funk for a couple of weeks. And one evening I thought, I'm gonna get my score to Mahler 2, and I'm gonna sit down with my really nice headphones and just follow along and listen. And I remember that happening and getting to the big finale that sort of changed my life. But just, I remember crying and just being there are moments where you feel endorphins and serotonin just flooding your brain. You know, it's very euphoric.
Absolutely.
There are a couple of times in my life where that has happened, and that was a pretty profound moment for me of, I've, throughout my entire life up to this point, I've been listening to music probably for at least an hour a day, whether it's just through studying or listening, but I always had music playing, and I didn't for a couple of months or a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And as soon as I started back up again, it turned me right back around, and that was a big moment for me that, music does have this kind of impact. It can really turn your whole outlook around.
I have one precaution there, because every study says that music, classical and meditation music, offer great mood-boosting benefits, and we've delineated some of those. But heavy metal and techno music were found to be ineffective and even detrimental.
Oh, interesting.
So for a warning out there, if you want to listen to heavy metal and you want to listen to techno, follow up with some Beethoven or Mahler.
Right.
Because it leaves you down there. It carries you with it. Mm-hmm. And so,
do you have other music you like other than classical?
Yes. There's a whole... I listen really to almost any kind of genre. If someone recommends an artist or an album, I'll save it on Spotify and just kind of listen. I really enjoy... It really depends on the mood that I'm in.
Yeah.
Or if I'm out for a walk, or if I'm cooking, or out for a stroll, I put on all types of music.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I can just imagine.
I've never understood rap, but as I listen to music, whether it be country, western, especially some of the old, there was a lot of talking, just talking, telling a story. And rap is a different way, starting perhaps in a varied cultural group, to tell a story about something they were experiencing. And so I'm learning to try to appreciate the different genres, although that was the most difficult one for me to transit to.
Yeah, I can understand, because rap and hip-hop has always had this... It depends on who I'm talking about too, but rap and hip hop seem to be difficult for people to kind of grasp, or country could be difficult.
Yeah.
And I grew up in Alabama, and you know, I went to a high school of, it was 90.
Oh, boys.
Right. but I grew up with a lot of people who listened to rap and hip hop. Yeah. And what I find really fascinating about hip hop, especially with someone, with an artist who's a great rapper. One, they're an incredible lyricist. So when you can hear and understand the story that they're telling, the fact that there's this rhyming scheme, right, that flows and has this playing off of each other, that's incredible. I can't do that. And two, the rhythmic, the rhythmic aspect of someone like a virtuoso rapper. I would say Kendrick Lamar is one of those rappers. But it's how they can articulate, and the speed that they can articulate, and the flow and the rhythm, and playing with the beats, with the words. It's very... very impressive, and it kind of blows my mind when I listen to it. So, but sometimes it's hard to just get past the bass and the beat, you know, so you can't really absorb it, but you need a really good sound system to be able to appreciate the production quality of it all.
You also need your brain to be able to comprehend. There's something you'll love to hear about. Being speech-language pathologists, we look at sound and hearing and music and all of those things, but When a baby is born, they, within hours and the first day or so, will entwine with their mother's basic rhythms, whatever her super segmentals of her sounds are, that baby will entrain exactly with those. And so the mother doesn't know it, the baby doesn't know it, but they're in just synchrony. And I think that speaks to music of all kinds and to people of any nation in the world, that if we think back to the super segmentals and when we were born and the joy of connection, I think music really does just in itself provide connection to the music. But also when you go to a symphony, you're sitting there with all of these people totally connected all together to one thing.
She's told me often how it's important for a mother to sing to a child, to a baby, to talk all the time, regardless of their being able to immediately give you a response, their eye contact. Tell us some of that.
Well, yeah, in the beginning, their little computer's all on input. And so they're listening, and that's how they learn, simply by watching you and by listening to you. So, for instance, if you go la, 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 they can see your tongue, and I've had a two-month-old raise his tongue up and down just with me because they can see it and they can hear it, which is the beginning of learning language. And music can play a wonderful role, singing to your child. And remember, it's easier to learn a language when you're singing.
That's right.
Your parents didn't necessarily, they weren't into music.
Not necessarily. Well, I mean, more just the popular, top 20 of the day. But sometimes I do remember a couple of nursery rhymes that my mom would sing to me in Mandarin. And but I'm in this right now because we have a 17 month old at home. So and I sing to him all the time, and I play a wide range of music for him all the time, and it's so interesting to see what he enjoys and how he reacts to things. When he hears music now, it could be anything, but when he hears it, his body, one, it changes, and he just starts moving to whatever the beat. And he's been doing that we've been dancing with him since the day he was born. You know, we always had dance parties and played the same song, you know, and I mean, raising a child is the funnest thing in the world.
It's like a symphony all of
its
own.
It is.
I have one more fun thing for you. Okay, imagine a greenhouse and it's quiet and all the beautiful plants are in there. And you know how plants pronate with the sun. They follow the sun and move with it during the day from east to west. But the plants also resonated with music and would pronate toward music and the human voice. So maybe it's more than just we and just the babies.
I would love to see. It would be so interesting if someone invented a pair of goggles or something to where we could see sound waves as they're being projected out produced. Is there anything like that?
No. I mean, you can generate it, and we can see sound waves on like radar-like equipment.
Right, or in
But for us to be able to see them coming at us through the air, speaking to someone, wouldn't that? And I can just see it being in colors, too.
Right, and how it bounces around the room before it decimates. Like I have
a feeling it's there. We just can't see it. Okay, now that's your job.
That is my next big. That's something I've been thinking about the last couple of days. Actually, 2 days ago, I thought the meditation. Wellness industry now they've figured it out in terms of the marketing and the benefits of, because music has a lot of the same kind of benefits. And it's easier than sitting still and trying to see your thoughts and mind. But how does knowing all of this research, Suzanne, that you're saying and the benefits of music, how do we translate that so that the general population or the wellness community or even the investments that are in the wellness community can... How does classical music ride that kind of wave or have that same kind of surge in terms of popularity and if it's so good for us? That's the question of, like, how can we do that?
Now, one day I'll figure it out. That's a great and grand question. I mean, the golden benefits of music are just enormously, incredibly beneficial to us. So I guess it's going to be our job to try to kind of work on that.
Right.
And first that comes to mind here, folks out there listening, is come to the symphony.
Right.
Come and bring friends, get tickets for your family members or neighbors for Christmas. Mm-hmm. And that brings me to another practical question here. One we can answer right now is, what's coming up in the next few weeks? And then the next thing after that would be, how do we get in touch? How do we get tickets? And the next thing after that should be, how do we volunteer to come and help? And how do you use volunteers? And then one more right after that, can we help house visiting musicians?
Great.
Which I think would be great.
Yeah. So a couple of, I'll tell everyone about two concerts that we have coming up. One is this weekend, Thursday the 13th, Friday the 14th, and Saturday the 15th. All three concerts at Hope Lutheran. You can find out the times, 7:30 and 2:30 on Saturday, but on bozemansymphony.org, which is our website for information and tickets. But the program is our symphonic choir concert. And the program features a couple of different composers with a focus on a composer named Morten Lauritzen. And specifically, the big piece on the second half that includes the orchestra, not just the choir, is a piece called Lux Aeterna, Light Everlasting. And I put this program together about a year ago because I knew November would be a time of angst, probably, for a lot of people, depending on our political climate. You know, this was before the election, so there's always 50% who aren't so happy, right? So it didn't matter who won. But that November is usually a stressful time for everyone. And so this concert, it was specifically designed to calm the nervous system. Oh. And so the music that everyone's going to hear isn't going to be this loud and bombastic or big. It's just beautiful sounds that are coming at you for an hour. And the Morten Lauritzen, American composer who's living, writes some of the most glorious choral music. We are doing his nocturnes and on the first half, and so it's this juxtaposition of night and light, and that's happening this weekend, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, November 13th, 14th, and 15th. That is music for the soul. It just basically feels like your soul is getting a hug for the hour.
Wonderful description.
It's healing.
It's healing. And the Lux Aeterna was written at a time when the composer's mother had just recently passed away. Mm-hmm. So he borrows texts from the Requiem Mass, and it's a very moving and healing work, which is what a requiem is for the healing of people, the mourning of people. I advise it's a smaller concert than our normal full orchestra, but the music is just absolutely breathtaking.
And how perceptive of your group to think about that we're kind of torn in our spirits right now.
Mm-hmm.
Even if we're the winning half, whichever that is or whatever, we are concerned about the other half. And mm-hmm. so all of us could pull together with this wonderful offering. And we've talked about all the benefits of music, and here he's being so psychological about giving us an antidote to what November's can be. I love that.
And then the other concert that I want to tell everyone about is on December 12th, 13th, and 14th. This is our holiday spectacular concerts. And this is a show that I created when I became music director here. And we've moved from 2 concerts to 4 concerts because of how popular they are. But this year is sort of, you can think of, if you search Pavarotti on Spotify and you can find his Christmas album. It's basically features a wonderful operatic tenor, Terence Chinloy, and the music that we're playing also features our symphonic choir, and it's just uplifting, fun holiday Christmas music.
And
we end every concert with a Christmas carol sing-along. So we go through, I ask the audience to stand up, we turn on the house lights, and everyone sings with the orchestra and the chorus. So what's awesome is that there's about 1,100 people singing in this space together. I have the best seat in the house, right in the center.
Oh, yes.
And you just, people leave that concert feeling so happy and joyous and uplifted. And a lot of people say, you know, the holiday season doesn't start for me until they come to this concert. It starts there. Yeah. It feels like the holidays because of this concert. So those are 2 concerts that I think people can come check out.
Yeah. And I must say, after the last concert, everybody left, and I looked around as we're leaving. Everybody was smiling. Mm-hmm. Every single person I looked at.
So. Oh, good, good.
Oh, and so the next part of that would be how to get tickets real mm-hmm. quickly. For anybody out there, he's going to give us phone numbers or websites
sure.
here in a minute. So maybe if that's good. And ticket availability, these tend to go. We need to go ahead and get our orders in.
That's right. So all the information can be found on bozemansymphony.org, bozemansymphony.org. That's one way to get tickets and find out information. The other is our main ticket office is located on Main Street in Bozeman, on Main and Rouse, on 402 East Main Street. It's just on the second level above the Gem Gallery, so if you know where the Gem Gallery is. Or you can call our office at 406-585-9774. That's 406-585-9774. That's how you can get tickets. Our office hours are Monday through Friday, 9 to 5 p.m. And if you want to find ways to get free tickets or hear a performance without mm-hmm. having to pay, there are volunteer opportunities. So we're always looking for volunteers. In fact, we love our volunteers. Our concerts would be a lot harder to put on without the volunteers. What a volunteer can do is can usher for our concerts, hand out programs before the concerts, help people find their seats. There's also another volunteer opportunity to house some of our musicians. So some of our musicians come in from outside of Bozeman, in the region, and it really helps the symphony a lot if we don't have to put them into a hotel room for a full week.
Oh,
as you can imagine, in Bozeman, that's not
yeah.
cheap. Mm-hmm. So typically, if you're a volunteer at the concerts, you can hear the concerts as they're happening because you're volunteering, And we also give tickets for people who house our musicians as a small token of appreciation.
Mm-hmm. So just to ask a couple more questions, like if you had a visiting musician in your home, you would know to provide meals and rides to and from when practices occur or
it's well,
whatever.
It's really just a private room, and that's it.
You don't
really have
to
provide meals or mm-hmm. I mean, our musicians love to get to know the family that they're staying with or if there's a ride, but typically there's some carpooling, and if you live closer to downtown, that is more ideal.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's usually just a private room and bathroom if
and
possible.
So one part of volunteerism might be picking up visiting artists and bringing them for rehearsals and
that's right.
performances.
Yep.
So that's another edge of
yes.
volunteering.
And there's if you're retired and you have skills that and you still want to work and for a nonprofit, or if you have hours to fulfill, you know, we are a 501c3 nonprofit organization. There's office work and administrative work that we could use help on, as putting tickets in envelopes, writing thank you cards, just a wide range of opportunities for folks. And again, you can visit BozemanSymphony.org, email info@BozemanSymphony.org if you are curious and want to find out more information on how to volunteer.
And that just really sounds rewarding, I think. This is one volunteer job where you might get more than you give.
Yeah, right,
and,
right.
And memories and mental health and all of those wonderful aspects of music in our world, maestro.
I was wondering, we have about 5 minutes left in today's show. What have we not talked about that perhaps you would like to talk about?
Let's see. Well, you know, I think maybe a little bit about the vision of the Bozeman Symphony and where we're trying to head towards.
Yes.
We are currently in year two of our 5-year strategic plan. So last year I had signed a 5-year contract extension. And what that looks like is there are a couple of these pillars. One is investing in our staff and musicians, higher salaries. The second is increasing the kinds of concerts that we do and the amount of concerts that we do, increasing and expanding our education and community engagement. So, for example, we have a program called Symphony Storytime, where we have a partnership with HRDC and the Bozeman Public Library, where we have a musician paired with a reader, and the musician plays music while a story is heard. And we just had Angela, our harpist, play this past weekend, and there were about 150, 170 people. two, sometimes three generations there. But it's meant for pre-K, young kids, and parents and their grandparents come and are getting the same benefits,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly, they wouldn't miss it.
But we want to expand that
yes.
and what we do. And finally, the last one and sort of the biggest opportunity that I think, and the most challenging one to complete, is a search for a new home and a concert hall here in Bozeman. A world-class acoustic space for the performing arts, and so we've outgrown our current space, and there's so much more that we could do if we had the capacity and technology of a performing arts hall, concert hall,
yes.
And so that is. That is the big torch that I'm carrying, is trying to find land for building a place like this, and people who want to leave a legacy, and in terms of funding and a space like this, and just sort of a community effort to make this happen.
And that would be such a perfect segue into the future. And that reminds me of one thing I wanted to mention is that some occupations you're finished at 50. You have to, that's enough of that. But we saw Segovia play the wonderful classical guitarist when he was like 92. And so it's a lasting legacy if you should think to help with this land or this wonderful new building effort. And it will provide lifetimes for the musicians. They don't stop at age 50. They are just getting to their prime.
Right.
So it's a lifetime of providing and joy. And we sure hope that comes about sooner rather than later.
Right.
Yes.
Hopefully before I turn 50. That'd be ideal.
Long before, yes.
Long before.
Maybe next year.
No, before I'm 40, which is in 3 years.
Let's try for that. Yeah. Well, we find that Bozeman is enriched so totally by our musicians. You know, you've mentioned several, like Carrie, and we have Pico, who went to Juilliard and does so much. Although science is kind of called Pico away to become a research scientist of all things. Like you mentioned, it's brain food. So we really want to thank you and applaud and say bravo to all of the efforts. And if you could remind us one more time of the contact points.
Sure.
Norman,
well,
please.
Suzanne and Arliss, I just want to say thank you both for having me on your show.
You're welcome.
And
thank you.
To the listeners who are listening, come check us out. You can find information at bozemansymphony.org. It's bozemansymphony.org. And we hope to see you at our concerts, because if you do, your brain gets bigger and you lose weight. So,
oh,
perfect.
And you're happier.
And happier.
Yes. Thank you, Norman.
Thank you all.
Just beautiful.
Thank you so much, Norman. And thank you, Gallatin Valley, for listening to us. This is the Health and Happiness Show, and we'll see you next time.